We had an eventful Christmas Day. Paula said, somebody said you didn't remember much about the trip into town except thinking you were going to die from my driving. We need to straighten that out. She said she wanted to go home, and I said, you're too sick. And she said, I mean to heaven. And then she complained about my driving immediately after that. So let me explain what we're going to talk about today, and I'm going to do it sort of non-scientifically, because the scientific numbers just get to be overwhelming. Just trust me. We had a rocket scientist here and a nuclear scientist last week, and they both said I handled the science of who made God okay. I don't think either one of them were willing to give me an honorary degree, but the numbers today would just overwhelm you. I'm going to give you just a couple of things, but I'm going to talk about how precisely the universe is made. Obviously, if we were a little closer to the sun, we'd burn up. If we were a little further away, we'd freeze to death. Even on our own planet, the Antarctic and the Arctic are out of sync. We couldn't live there. But the universe is, in the words of scientists, life permitting. And we keep looking for life outside of Earth, and we haven't found it. There's not really any reason to believe that ET is out there. And by life, we don't necessarily mean humans, but life in any form, the things that would permit reproduction. The way they sort of define life is, could it reproduce itself? And there's no evidence so far of any form of organic life in the universe other than on Earth. The chances, one agnostic scientist said, the chances are of life being permitted, in his words, anywhere else on Earth, I mean in the universe, is it's 10 to the 120th power, which is, thankfully, he explained that. He said that would be like taking a .22 rifle and shooting it across the observable universe, which is 20 billion light years across, 20 billion light years across. And having that single .22 rifle slug center a one-inch target when it got there 30 billion light years later, and remember that light's traveling at 186,000 miles a second. So the probability that life exists is just really remote. Atheists have said, well, the size of the universe means that maybe there's multiple universes. There's no evidence of that. They come up with all kind of theories to justify why there might be life on Earth when there's not somewhere else. But the very size of the universe and the balance of the universe seems to prove an intelligent design to me. Smaller would be easier. They just get into astronomical numbers where there's no gazillion to talk about. One scientist said the chance of life on Earth was as high as 10 to the 100th power to the 123rd power. Now, I don't know how they come up with that, but which is to say it's impossible that life just happened on Earth, because there are thousands of interdependent, interactive systems that have to be in place, and we're going to talk about that just a little. One of those figures that came up was that every adult synthesizes, every human body synthesizes 150 times 1,018 amino acids every second with precise synthesis. And I apologize for my cold. I've been coughing for a week. 150 times 1,018 amino acids synthesized by your body every second. It's going on right now. You know, you want to look and say, I didn't see that happen. The possibility of that precision just being an accident requires more faith than I can come up with. So our text for today is Romans 1:20. And what Paul is arguing here is that there's enough in nature to teach us about God, that that a God who would design is sort of evident. For ever since the creation of the world, his invisible nature and attributes, that is, his eternal power and divinity, have been made intelligible and clearly discernible in and through the things that have been made, his handiworks. So men are without altogether any excuse, without any defense or justification. So Paul's saying there's enough in nature, if you just look at it as we're going to do today, to say there had to be a designer. There had to be a God who created. Most people who don't believe that God created the heavens and the earth choose that not on the basis of science, but on the basis of morals, on the basis of philosophy. They don't want to believe it because if God created, then they're obligated to the Creator in some kind of way. So what we're going to talk about today is the teleological argument for the existence of God. We've done the cosmological argument for the existence of God. And the teleological argument, evidence of the existence of God in creation, was first popularized, I guess, by William Paley in 1802. And Paley's argument went like this. If I were walking through a field, a heath, he said, and stumbled over a rock, and you said to me, how long do you think that rock has been in that field? I would say, well, maybe forever. But if I walk in through the field and look down and saw a watch and it was running, and I realized how precise the gears were there and the different metals and the springs, and you said to me, how long do you think that watch has been here? It wouldn't be a good answer to say forever. If there's a watch, he argued, there is a watchmaker. And it wouldn't have just have come together as a rock might have. So here's the teleological argument for the existence of God. Any intelligent design had a designer. Only 3 points. The universe, that's one. Two, the universe demonstrates a highly complex intelligent design. We're all agreed on that. And then three, therefore the universe had to have a designer. And we'll go from there. Isaac Newton, 17th century, listen to what he wrote. The most beautiful system of the sun, planets, and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominion of an intelligent and powerful being. And as we look, and we have more opportunity to look today than anybody has ever had. I was just thanking God, driving down to the inn this morning, for all of the science that's proven things like the Big Bang, like some of the things we're going to talk about today that just couldn't be observed before. I'm not going to get to it, I don't think, but there's a whole list of things in Scripture where the Bible has been right about science. And science is finding that the universe is even more precisely designed than we would have previously thought, than certainly more precise than a watch. And if you found a watch, you'd say there was a maker. You look at the universe, the conclusion is there has to be a maker. The earth, the precise placement to support life. There's thousands of interdependent systems that support our life on earth in a very hostile environment. Let's compare that for a few minutes. There was a Norman Geisler has written an illustration using Apollo 13 as the source of how to think about these are called anthropic principles. You don't need to remember that. Anthropic means human or man. What are the principles that sustain human life on earth? Human life could only exist with perfect conditions, very precise conditions, in an otherwise very lifeless universe. There's a lot of cold and nothing out there. Apollo 13 blasted off on April the 13th, 1970, And 55 hours and 54 seconds later, there was an explosion of the number two oxygen tank. The famous words from Tom Cruise. Was it Tom Cruise or Tom Hanks? Who did that? Tom Hanks. Houston, we have a problem. I know it wasn't him, but a great movie if you get to see it. Houston, we have a problem. They were 200,000 nautical miles from Earth, two-thirds of the way to the moon, and they're losing power and they're losing oxygen. They're spewing oxygen out in space. They don't know exactly what's happening there. Got to have oxygen. If you don't have oxygen, you're not going to make it. The Earth's atmosphere is 21% oxygen. If it were 25% oxygen, fires would just spontaneously erupt everywhere. Just 4% more oxygen in the atmosphere, and we'd have oxygen fires. Oxygen can be very explosive. If it were 15% oxygen, we would suffocate. We couldn't breathe. And so on Apollo 13, the oxygen tank explosion depletes the oxygen supply, but it also depletes the water supply because, remember, water is the only thing you remember is H2O. It's hydrogen and oxygen. And they were going to make their water, and now they can't make any water. They survived on one small cup of water a day for 4 days and were really severely dehydrated when they got back. So the lunar module had some emergency supplies, and it was supposed to take two men around on the face of the moon for a little while. And so all three of them climbed in this cramped lunar module and tried to survive. They had to navigate by the stars because they didn't have navigation equipment there, and so they were kind of doing sextant stuff, and they were counting on going by the moon and the gravitational force of the Earth using a slingshot method would circle the moon and bring them back to Earth, and they had to do a reentry with a 2-degree precision. They had to come in at 5.5 to 7.5 degrees above the horizon in order for them to make it. All their necessary systems are shut down. They are in trouble. And Geisler wants us to think in those terms that we are on a little bitty piece of the universe, and everywhere else is hostile to our environment. I would say we have an Earth suit. I've talked about that at funerals some, that we've put on an Earth suit because we're out of our natural environment. If we were in space, we would blow up. If we were under the ocean, we would compress down. You could get your weight down to where you want it on the moon. You just couldn't live there. And you could get your waist down to what you want it at 1,000 feet below the surface of the water, but you couldn't survive there. So we have an Earth suit. It's called a human body because we're out of our natural environment, came from God, returned to God, and we're in a hostile environment, a tent that we put on is the way Scripture describes that for a little while. If the atmosphere of Earth were a little less transparent, I guess is the way. If it were a little thicker, then not enough radiation would come from the sun to sustain life. We've got to have that sun's radiation to sustain life. If it were a little more transparent, then we would all die from the radiation. If it was thinner, too much radiation, we can get sunburned now pretty easily. So, again, all I want to do is leave you without a lot of numbers that you wouldn't remember, with the feeling of how precisely the Earth is placed to be life-permitting. We've got a precise composition of nitrogen, oxygen, and carbon dioxide and ozone. If it's not exactly what those three things are in our atmosphere, then life would be impossible. We couldn't make it if those things weren't perfectly balanced. The precision of all of that. The Earth-Moon's gravitational interaction. Apollo 13 is going to slingshot around the moon and gravity is going to pull it back to Earth because they have no power, but they're in a vacuum out there. And so gravity is going to do the work. It depends on that to get them back. But if the Earth's gravitational interaction was greater, we'd have much higher tides that would simply sweep over the planet. If we had more gravity, because tides are affected, you know all about that. We would have if it was higher gravity, we'd have a fluctuating atmosphere that would constantly change, and we'd have a more rapid rotational period that would create winds that would not allow us to sustain life here, because if the Earth is rotating on its axis in a 24-hour cycle, if it was any faster, the wind would be at hurricane level and blow us away. We'd have a completely unstable climate that wouldn't sustain life. There was a problem on Apollo 13 in that they were exhaling oxygen. And what does that create? Carbon dioxide. What does that do? Kills us. Now, the Earth filters that out. You know, we got the trees and you know about all that. I won't do the rudimentary science stuff on that. So, as they're breathing in that lunar module, they realize that they're going to die from carbon dioxide poisoning. And they, with cardboard and some plastic garbage bags and duct tape, they created filters and were able to very creatively filter out the carbon dioxide so that they could live. That's another principle, that if carbon dioxide level on Earth was not just perfect, if it was any higher, we'd burn up with a greenhouse effect. And if it was any less, we would suffocate like the astronauts were about to do. So then, getting back close to Earth, the crew climbs back into the command module and tries to power it up with batteries that were left. The temperature in there is 38 degrees, water's condensating and dripping on the control panels, and nobody knows if that's going to work. Congress passes a resolution to pray for the astronauts coming back, because y'all are all old enough to remember. We had days to think about this. What's going to happen to these guys coming back? They had to get back into the command module because the lunar module didn't have a heat shield. They couldn't re-enter Earth. And even the Pope is requesting the world to pray. But they're coming in at 25,000 miles an hour. 7 miles a second. And so the heat shield, nobody knows whether it's been damaged or not. Here they come. Scientists estimate that if the gravitational relationship was different by point, and then they put 36 zeros and a one, if the gravitational effects were that little different in our relationship to the sun, neither the sun would exist nor would we exist. So 36 zeros, point, 36 zeros and a one is how precise gravity has to be for us to survive, or our sun wouldn't even survive. We know there's going to be a 3-minute window for them coming back when there's no radio contact. And everybody says whatever they want to say, and some real intense conversation at that point. Everybody's trying to be calm. And 4 minutes goes by with no radio contact. And then I remember watching the television and seeing that capsule coming down and the drug chutes released. If those chutes don't release, they're coming in at 300 miles an hour. And everything worked, and they were picked up. And you know the rest of the story. I'm using that as Geisler does to say they're out of their natural environment, and they got to have everything working to make it work to live. It's not natural for them to be in space, and that's the way the Earth is our capsule. We are wearing these Earth suits. We're out of our natural environment. And if everything wasn't precisely designed to 10 to the 100th power, to 36 zeros and a one in front of a point, these interdependent systems, if they weren't all in place, we simply couldn't live here. there are 150 of those. I mentioned three, okay? There's 150 interdependent systems, and we're discovering in science another 10 to 12 a year that if they weren't precisely there, we couldn't have life on Earth. I'm going to give you 10 more real quickly. I know 3 points is all you're supposed to do in a sermon. But here, these are called anthropic constants. These are things in the universe, scientific laws, that if they weren't there, we couldn't have life on Earth. One, the planetary movements create centrifugal force that hold the Earth and the sun in orbit. Now, you think about it. The sun is in orbit, and we're in orbit around the sun. We're going through the Milky Way galaxy. The Milky Way galaxy is moving away from every other galaxy. It's the minimum distance between stars is 30,000 light years. But everything is precisely balanced to where we've got gravity that's holding these things in place as we're spinning and hurtling through space. If the universe had expanded 1/1,000,000th more slowly, then the universe would collapse upon itself. There was an explosion, but there's gravitational pull back to this. The scientists of the Big Bang say if it was 1/1,000,000th more slowly, it would have simply imploded back. And if it expanded any faster, then there'd be no galaxies. They wouldn't have formed. The third point, light travels at 186,000 miles a second. They say any change in that would not sustain life, and they got a lot of reasons for that. If water vapor in the atmosphere was any less, Earth would be too cold. If it was any more, there'd be too much heat. It's just right. One of the interesting anthropic constants is Jupiter. Jupiter is a huge gaseous star. Huge. And it acts as a shield. Its gravitational pull is so great that comets and the space clutter, asteroids, all go to Jupiter that would otherwise impact Earth, or occasionally one gets through. But Jupiter is so big and so precisely placed that it acts as a shield for Earth with regard to asteroid and comets bombarding our planet. If the Earth's crust was a little thicker, there'd be too much oxygen to support life, have way too much oxygen. If the Earth's crust was any thinner, then we'd have earthquakes all the time that would destroy life. It's just the right thickness. We've got those tectonic plates shifting around. It's bringing up oxygen, and we would not have oxygen if it was any thicker. If the Earth's rotation was longer than 24 hours, then the time between sunlight and dark would be so long that we'd freeze to death. It's the sun that warms everything else, everything up the next day. Any shorter, if we were spinning faster than 24 hours, then the wind would be so great that we couldn't stand on Earth. The Earth is tilted on its axis 23 degrees. Remember that maybe from science class. If there was a slightly less tilt, life couldn't be sustained and the sun wouldn't hit us right. If there was a greater tilt, we wouldn't get sun. All of that to say that the 23-degree angle allows for livable temperatures. Otherwise, the temperature on Earth would be too extreme, either hot or cold, and we couldn't live. The ninth point was interesting, I thought. If it's called atmospheric electrical discharge. We call that lightning. If that rate was greater, then fires would be burning. You know the power of lightning hitting a tree, hitting a house. If we had more atmospheric electrical discharge, then lightning would be striking all the time. There'd be fires everywhere, and the Earth would be burning up. But if it was any less, that's what brings nitrogen fixing to the soil to allow plants to grow, is the lightning strikes. It's just perfectly balanced. And the last thing is if there were more earthquakes, obviously a lot more lives would be lost. If there were just a lot more earthquakes, it would be a scary thing. But if there were fewer earthquakes, the necessary nutrients from the ocean floor and riverbeds would not be brought to the surface, where we could have the minerals in the soil to grow food for us. It's cycling nutrients back as a result of the tectonic uplifts that are there. Now, that's just 13 things out of roughly 150. Hugh Ross says there's 150 constant anthropic things that cause life to be sustainable on Earth, but we're discovering more all the time. Chances of life on Earth, again, 10 to the, just way out there somewhere. Now, how can we look at all of these things and say there was not intelligent design to make Earth life permitting? Here's what atheists say at this point. We lucked out. Boy, that would require a lot of faith. We just are lucky. And all these amino acids that are being synthesized just happened. And all this creation we see, out of nothing. Nothing caused it. There was no purpose. There's no design. There's nothing going on. I say, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The teleological argument, every design has a designer, verified by anthropic principles. We know that beyond a reasonable doubt, I think, that the universe had a designer, and therefore, if the universe has a designer, we've got to account for that. And fortunately, we know who he is. That from the passage we read in responsive reading today from Isaiah 40, that he would create the universe, and yet he deals with us as lambs. I'm telling you, the only reason God created sheep was so he could say, I'm your shepherd, because sheep are dumb, they can't be trained to do anything. And he says he deals with us like in the King James it says, a pregnant ewe lamb. That's not to say that women when they're pregnant are a little crazy, I don't think. However, you judge that for yourself. God deals with it. He's our shepherd. If we don't have a shepherd, we don't have any hope at all. It's not that you're supposed to attain, to be, to grow, to be great. It's that all you've got to do is look to your shepherd, this great shepherd of the sheep who created the earth for habitable life. He had one purpose in doing that. He wants you to know him. He wants you to know who he is, and he wants you to love him. There's no other reason for us to be here. But to just say, just happened. The watts just all came together in the field. Those cogs intermeshed, and amazingly, it keeps time precisely. But that just happened. That'd be so much faith. I just couldn't take that leap of faith at all. But then when you look at the complexity of the universe, it far surpasses anything that we could say about, you know, even a wonderful 21-jewel pocket watch, of how precise that railroad watch might be. This earth was created to sustain life for us. You can say, well, is there other intelligent life out there? Don't know, don't care. Doesn't make me any difference about that. That's God hadn't told us, and that's all in the hands of God. It says of the increase of his government, there will be no end. I'm not sure how we fit into that, but we're here to be prepared to rule and reign with him and judge angels and be with him forever in a place that he's prepared for us. If he could create all this, then he's outside of time. It allows for miracles because we can say, God, here's what we want you to do. We want you to heal Paula. Lord, we want you to touch this one. We want you to take care of this problem. And God has the power, and he loves us and cares about us like a shepherd does his sheep. it should encourage us. Then in order to help us see his love, he allowed evil and sin, because without sin you can't know love. If you're perfect, if you were perfect, if you'd never made a mistake, and God says he loves you, your response should be, well, you should. I'm perfect. But since you sinned and God says he loves you, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So he could show you how much he loves you and pay for those sins on the cross of Calvary and then say, be reconciled to me, that we can be together forever. What an incredible plan. We're going to give you just a few moments to prepare your heart for communion. This awesome, incredible, let there be light, big bang God. He says, where two or three are gathered together, I'm there. He's here today to hear your prayer, to touch your heart, and to draw you closer into the kingdom and give you more faith. Let's pray.